You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. Come get some. Beware,
I live. IGN GameScoop.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I am your host, Damon Hatfield. With me this week is Greg Miller. Hillary Goldstein is here.
Scoop.
And Colin Moriarty. Last week, we got a big show for you. Lots of stuff to get through this week. Last week, we talked a lot about Mortal Kombat. Let's just keep talking about Mortal Kombat.
People love it.
There's new stuff coming out about this game every day. We have a new trailer that just went up today, even. And earlier this week, they had the trailer about Kratos. Kratos is exclusive to the PS3 version of the
game. Is he now?
That's what I hear.
Oh, I thought he'd be on the Wii version.
I don't think he's going to be in the 360 version. But to me, that's kind of makes the PS3 version seem like a clear winner.
Really?
There's nothing exclusive to the 360 version, right?
Yet, right?
That I know of?
Yeah, you'd still like to think they'd have something up their sleeve, right?
Master Chief.
Yeah. Would they allow him to get like eviscerated and screwed up, though?
They don't use Master Chief, but they had a Spartan in DOA 4.
Okay.
So it was a female Spartan. It was actually the first ever female Spartan in a video
really?
Game. And it was dumb. And they had like a Halo-themed like level and stuff like that. So I could see that, but maybe they're going to use a Gears of War character because you know, I would think like with the chainsaw and stuff like that, that seems a little bit more fitting to Mortal Kombat. And Gears of War is coming out this year, so that'd be good for them to kind of promote
good point,
that
good
way.
Point.
So that's all that stuff's possible.
I think
that Gears of War beta is coming out right at the same time that Mortal Kombat releases. So I mean, for me, that makes a lot of sense for Microsoft, but who knows if they really will.
Are they protective of their characters? Would they mind like them getting their chests broken and hearts ripped out?
I don't know. It's Gears of War.
I know.
Whatever. Fuck it.
So, I mean, in the video that
we saw... Try 100 shitloads or whatever it was.
In the video we saw, we didn't see, like, Kratos being killed in a fatality.
Mm-hmm.
You think you'll be able to?
Yeah, they were talking. They had a PlayStation blog shared a video with us where they talked to Stig, the director there of God of War, and Ed Boon. And they were talking about, like, this is the first time they've ever seen Kratos' skull and stuff. And, like, he does take damage. He can't be killed and stuff like that, so... There's definitely going to be some gruesome stuff.
Might break the game if he couldn't be killed.
Yeah. But fatality. Just go, no thanks.
Judging from the video, though, he's the most powerful character in the history of fighting.
He has more weapons than anybody else they said in the game, yeah.
Yeah.
But he's been balanced.
And then he can absorb red orbs to heal himself. I mean, come on.
Can he? I didn't see that.
In the trailer, if you look really closely, there's one scene where he's just stretching out, and you're kind of like, oh, he's looking badass. But if you look really closely, you can actually see red orbs getting absorbed from the side into him, so... Yeah, he has pretty much everything. He has, like, the head of Helios and all kinds of stuff. Like, he just seems like he's going to wallop. Like, remember when they put Link into Soul Calibur?
Yeah.
And Miyamoto said his one instruction to them was Link must win. And that's why Link was so incredibly powerful. And then they had dead Yoda in Soul Calibur 4 on the Xbox version, and that was probably even worse.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't do high hits on him because he's, like, 2 feet tall.
Yeah.
I don't like these exclusive things. Just give me the character. Mortal Kombat, your characters should be able to stand on their own. Give me another God of War game. Don't do this dumb shit.
Wow.
I'm sorry.
You've drawn a line in the sand here.
Yes! Unless they put some cool Xbox character out there.
Yeah. What's a cool Xbox character?
Oh,
Avatar.
Really your own Avatar.
Yeah.
And Mortal Kombat.
That would be good. You can perform fatalities on your Avatar. Yeah, so they have the Kratos exclusive. Of course, none of us are really big Kratos fans. Here at IGN,
I don't like God of War at all. Yeah,
I like God of War 3, but I still think Kratos is a dumb character.
Yeah. I like God of War.
I'm so angry all the time.
He actually fits in with Mortal Kombat really well.
Yeah, no, it's a really good fit, especially considering spoilers, the last boss battle in God of War 3. And you're fighting Zeus on a 2D plane. You know?
Which is the scene that they have in the trailer. So like that's the level they put in the game, which is kind of fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's cool.
It's cool. I mean, it would be a lot worse if they put in, like, Nathan Drake or Ratchet and Clank or
something.
I would
love to see Drake in that.
Ratchet and Clank would be pretty good, too. I want them to work in the, like, Viva Pinata somehow in the 360 version. Like, that should be, like, the friendships. Are friendships in this new one?
No. That was their whole thing. They're going back to hardcore Mortal Kombat, blood, fatalities.
But this is the growing problem for Microsoft, right? Is that when we talk about this, you could even if jokingly, you could probably name 10 different Sony franchises that they could have thrown in there, whether or not they work. But Microsoft, you're basically like Gears of War, Master Chief, car from Forza.
Alan Wake.
Yeah.
Just shining light on everybody.
The Alan Wake level is completely black, and you just have to shine your flashlight to see the enemy.
Good.
They just don't have, like, they missed out. They don't have, like, a character where you're just like.
A Kinect robot?
Outside of Master Chief, like, you just don't associate really.
And even that's not a good fit. Like, Kratos is a great. I'm not a huge fan of God of War, but Kratos is a great, like, almost a perfect.
Fit for Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, a perfect fit for Mortal Kombat, I think. Yeah.
I'm excited for Mortal Kombat. Out
really?
Next month.
Are you a big fighting game fan?
I'm not, but the more I see about Mortal Kombat, the more.
Whatever
I'm
happened
it.
With Marvel vs. Capcom and you're excited for that one too.
Yeah, I like it. Okay. I think it's hard to just like to play at home by yourself. You know, like that's
of course.
Fighting games are meant to be played.
I know, and so I just don't play games with
Jackie
other people.
Jackie Brown's not playing.
Yeah,
jumping on player two there.
You know, Mark Ryan will play Marvel vs. Capcom with you at any time you ask.
Yeah, anytime I want to get my ass kicked, I can play Marvel.
Apparently, the online doesn't work, right?
It's really bad from what I've heard.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Online and fighting games is very tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because any little bit of latency like basically ruins the game. So
it's a bummer.
But it seems like in Mortal Kombat, there's a lot to do on your own, like with all the challenge levels.
Yeah.
There's 300 challenges
in the challenge tower.
So, plus, I want to see like all the fatalities and stuff. Like Marvel vs. Capcom doesn't have that like fun extra stuff to pay off stuff to see, you know. So,
interesting.
I want to check it out.
So you think you'll be done when you see all the fatalities?
Probably, yeah.
Take it back. Yeah. Send it back.
What if Mortal Kombat were on the Wii? What would do you think, like, Mario would show up or Samus?
I mean, Mortal Kombat Armageddon was a Wii launch title, if I remember correctly.
Right.
Yeah. Who would be the Kirby.
Kirby. Turns into the brick and there's just, like, a blood puddle underneath him.
Fatality.
Would the PC-exclusive Mortal Kombat character just be, like, an NVIDIA graphics card or something?
It'd be the paperclip helper from...
Oh, you gotta watch out. Like, that pointy end can really
hurt. Yeah, they straighten
them
and just stab people with them.
Okay, Colin, you reviewed this Homefront game.
Yes.
Last week we were talking about, I guess on day one, it sold, like, 300,000 copies.
Yeah, 375,000.
And we thought that was like, well, that would just be all the pre-orders. Now that the reviews are out now, that's probably, you know, we'll see sales taper off. But now THQ has announced that it's sold a million copies. Now, of course, this is worldwide. So if you think like the U.S. is making up a third of that, you know, with their 370,000 or whatever. The others are coming from Europe and Asia territories. So I don't know. They might still not be tapering off. They might still be tapering off in the U.S. But 1 million copies is pretty good for a 10-day.
Yeah, I think it's really good. I think the most telling number really is the fact that they shipped 2.4 million copies. So I guess that those were the orders and the expectation that it'll sell that much. And apparently they need to sell 2 million to break even. So
that's a lot.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's a good game. Like I think that there's a lot of promise with that franchise. It's just like they need to make like the campaign was really short. And I thought it was Hillary played it too.
A million is a good start, though.
Yeah, it's a great start.
A very impressive. I guess proof that reviews don't matter.
I mean, I was going to say the same thing with Medal of Honor. I mean, Medal of Honor was even more
5 million copies of Medal of Honor sold.
So yeah, reviews. I guess you know some people are just going to buy a game if they're interested, no matter what. And Homefront's a good game, like I said. It's just it's not a great game.
But that is the way PR marketing works is that if they can convince a buyer to buy a game before a review exists, then the review's not going
to
stop you. Like
if
you convince yourself either by pre-order or just saying I'm going to buy this game, like then the review is more like validating your purchase. So people come to the review going, I hope they say it's great because I'm already getting this game tomorrow.
But I mean, Colin's review is positive. You know what I mean? Like,
Seven's not a bad score.
Yeah.
Seven's not a bad score. But you know, when you talk about games selling a million copies in ten days, you kind of think like this must be some kind of blockbuster that, like, this must be like Crysis, which is getting like nines all over the place from people. You would just expect that it's got this great vibe. But there's very few like uber positive like Homefront scores.
I see you.
Maybe that affects like the longer run, like where.
That's
like
what I was thinking.
After the month passes or whatever, and then people kind of go like, "Oh, should I buy this game?" They start looking at the reviews, going like, "Ooh."
That's why. So you didn't have the early exclusive.
No,
on Homefront. It went up the day that the game came out.
Yeah, it went up at midnight.
All those people that had pre-orders, like they didn't have time to check and change their minds.
They didn't know. And obviously, I mean, if you look at like Metacritic or something, there was a bunch of reviews from mostly small sites, but they were all positive or whatever. So I guess they may have seen those before they bought it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it was a good game. Like I know Greg and Hillary spent a lot of time with it, and I think the presentation and the setting are awesome. And like I hope that they're able to explore it in a sequel.
Improve the grenade throwing.
Yeah,
I thought it was perfect.
Hillary really hated the grenade throwing.
You actually liked the grenade throwing?
I didn't. When I started doing it, I thought I'd already heard Hillary's rants about it, so I thought it was going to be terrible. But it just turned out that I didn't have to angle anything. It was just like wherever I was pointing is where the grenade was going to go.
It's dumb. It's not like good grenade, and the animation's terrible.
Yeah, it's just
you don't play first-person shooters, so I don't think
I just don't finish them.
And then you don't have
to get bored and go oh.
It's just like the worst payoff for a grenade throw ever. It's like the explosions are just kind of weak and they don't really kill people. It's like you want like grenade throw is always like that. When you get the good grenade throw, you kind of feel like you earned something with it. But I'm curious. So, Damon, I know you see a lot of movies, and I bet there are times when you get excited about a movie before it comes out, and then maybe you see the reviews, and the reviews aren't that glowing. Do you still like Sucker Punch?
Sucker Punch, exactly.
Are you still going to see Sucker Punch?
No,
though?
Okay. I won't. But I feel like I'm in the minority with that. I feel like most people will still go see it anyway.
I've done that before, where I've convinced myself I'm going to go see a movie,
no matter what.
I look at Rotten Tomatoes, and it's like, oh, this movie got like a 40% or whatever, and I'm like, oh, well, I'm still going to go see it. Maybe it's still fun or whatever.
Yeah.
And sometimes I disagree with those reviews, though.
Maybe it's because I'm a reviewer, but I actually take movie reviewers seriously. Like if a game is getting bad reviews, has a bad score on Rotten Tomatoes, I probably am not going to see it.
I think movies are more subjective, though.
Than games?
Because like a game, like you actually have to play it. So like there are things that it's not as subjective to say like there's tons of bugs in this game and like this part of the game doesn't work or the level design is really linear. Like that stuff is just like real part of design, where it's like movies, you might think like, oh, this movie's not that funny. Some people didn't think The Hangover was that funny, and a lot of people thought The Hangover was really funny. Like to me, that stuff's way more subjective than like the gameplay aspects.
True,
I don't know.
But Hangover has like a high Rotten Tomatoes score.
That's true. Well, I think that's a good movie.
And also, if I'm interested in a movie, as long as it's getting like a 60%, I'll still give it a chance. But if it's getting universally panned, like Sucker Punch is, I'm not going to go and support that. Like that's the whole reason why bad movies like Sucker Punch and Transformers 2 get made, because people go see them anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'm going to tell you a movie that got panned back in the day. It was a movie called Casablanca.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Booty Tang.
Oh, well, let me tell you about the movie that was ahead of its time. Is Pootie Tang.
Pootie Tang.
I'm going to tell you right now. First of all, we need to have an IGN screening of Pootie Tang because it is one of the greatest movies ever made. And it's the only movie that I saw the movie 3 times in the theater that the theater cleared out every single time I watched it.
Nice.
People actually got up. After 5 minutes, people would get up and just walk out and be like, I am not. They didn't even want their money back, I think. They were just like, it's a sacrifice I've made. They can have the $10 I'm getting out of it.
Did Casablanca really get bad reviews back in the like or bad? I guess I don't know. If they reviewed movies back then.
It had poor reception when it first came out.
I didn't know that. It's interesting. It's an interesting little piece of trivia.
What about Burlesque? Is that going to be the same kind of thing in the end?
50 years from now, it's going to be considered one of the greatest movies.
Well, and on the opposite end, I'm pretty sure I remember a lot of positive reviews for Phantom Menace when it first came out.
Yeah, it did get
like right when we were about to go see it, I remember all the reviews came out and most people gave it like 3 out of 4 stars kind of stuff.
Wow.
And then I remember seeing it, and after I got out of the theater, I kind of was like, was it bad or was it good? Yeah, like I didn't actually know.
I remember it took a while before I realized how bad it was.
Yeah. No, it definitely did because because the excitement was so palpable, you know?
Yeah.
And you got in there and you're like, oh man, lightsabers and his new characters and you kind of just enjoy it. And then, like 2 weeks later, you're like, man, that movie kind of sucked.
Yeah.
It's terrible. And I bet there are a lot of people who reviewed that movie and then like 2 weeks later were like, what did I do? Why did I do that?
What have I done?
Dead Island. More interesting, I don't know if you want to call it controversy, but more interesting developments on Dead Island. The ESRB has forced them to censor the logo that they had that was going to be the box art, which is the black box with the red Dead Island logo, and then the hanging humanoid figure. You don't know if it's a person or a zombie or whatever. But the ESRB made them take that out, and I thought that was surprising. To me, that's not very salacious.
It's not at all.
A hanging person, like on a box.
Yeah, but like,
we had the chewed off fingers for Left 4 Dead, right?
Yeah, but that was a zombie hand, clearly.
Okay.
There's no blood coming out of that.
Yeah.
And I think the silhouette of somebody hanging from a tree is just not a universal favorite.
You think that's still? I mean,
look at it this way: you're a mom in GameStop. You've never heard of Dead Island before, and that's what you see on the box.
But I don't understand if they get rid of that.
Okay, but if you're a mom in GameStop, you're not the audience for this game.
Yeah, but they worry about, I mean, that's what people...
First of all, they're going to have Dead Island, the MILF edition, so... But if they get rid of the hanging person, they're not going to have an eye in the logo anymore? I don't understand.
Now it's just a dude. Now it's just a zombie coming in.
He's just standing there.
Because I thought it was just called Dead Slam.
Dead Slam? I think it's lame just because it's actually, I think, a really cool design.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was good.
For me, when I saw it, it immediately conjured thoughts of Night of the Living Dead remake. Remember that one from the 90s, or maybe even early aughts? It was the one that was in color, and in it, when Barbara escapes the house and runs into more survivors, she runs into their red net camp, and they've taken zombies and hung them up in the tree and are letting,
they're alive
around
still.
Them. Yeah, and then they shoot them.
Let's talk more about Redneck Rampage, one of the greatest zombie movies of all time.
Just a thought, zombie I'd like to fuck? A Zilf?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I hope there's some zilfing in this game.
Like the one-handed bikini zombie?
Yes. Apparently the in-game logo, so like the title screen, will remain unchanged.
Okay.
So it'll still be...
Oh, cool.
Once you open the package and actually get
so
the
So now
game.
It's misleading.
Yeah,
because I'm going to buy the game thinking like, oh...
At least nobody's getting hung in the game.
I never buy any games where people get hung, and then I'm going to start the game and be like, no!
Why? God.
I'm going to buy a copy of that game and then return it to GameStop immediately and be like, I'm sorry, I didn't realize somebody would be hung in the logo in this game.
I'm offended. Money back. Double my money. Pain and suffering.
Speaking of hung, is that show still going on?
I don't think it got canceled.
I never watched it.
I think it's still coming back for another season.
It was depressing. I didn't like
really?
It.
Really? You don't like it?
It's an odd show. It's one of those, if you don't have anything else to do, you might as well watch Hung, but it's not a good one.
It was like the lead-in to True Blood, right?
Yeah.
That's how I caught most of them.
Yeah.
Like, what is this? Oh, okay. He hates his life. And he's just having sex. All right.
The only thing really worthwhile is that Thomas Jane's Michigan accent is quite impressive.
Hmm.
Like, there's a lot of very nice subtlety to it. He does a very good job of it. Other than that, I don't know.
He's got
a lot of boobies in it, so, you know.
There's that.
Yeah, that's why it's a good lead-in for True Blood.
Yeah.
I would assume if it's coming back, it's just going to come back around the same time when True Blood comes back, which is summer or whatever.
Ezio, I did not know you had returned to Roma. I made a breakthrough in my research, a huge discovery.
Leonardo requests your presence.
Lead on, Messere. Leonardo!
They took him.
Greg, you reviewed this Assassin's Creed downloadable content.
The Da Vinci Disappearance.
Yeah. No.
Where's he gone?
Where has he gone?
He went in the future.
Huh.
No, that's not true.
He built a time machine?
Yeah.
He was an inventor.
He was, yeah, and a painter.
That's funny, because if he went in the future, then maybe your character from the future could actually run into him.
That'd be nice, Desmond.
Yeah.
It's time to play Desmond. I want that story. I'm sick of being in Rome. Let's get out of this.
Hopefully that's what Assassin's Creed 3 is.
Hopefully. You know? I don't know.
Are we kind of done with the whole Renaissance setting?
I hope so. I am. Yeah, I'm sick of it. Like, that was my whole thing about this review. Like, I like Brotherhood. I know.
Now you've played Assassin's Creed 2, you've played Brotherhood, now you're playing the DLC. It's all more of the same.
Exactly. That was the problem with the DLC, is that it just felt like it could have been a mission in the game because it really didn't do much. And, like, I put in the review, right, that, like, I love Brotherhood, and I had a great time with it, and I think the ending to Brotherhood is one that if you didn't play, when you start 3, you're going to be like, wait, what? Like, you know what I mean? If you skip that and you're into that storyline, people pass it over because it was multiplayer. They missed something important. Mm-hmm. Not doing this, there's nothing important to miss. Like, the big reveal at the end is some spoilers, I don't care. Some coordinates, right? And Ezio's reaction to this is just
coordinates,
like...
Coordinates, no!
He's like, okay. And walks away, and Leo's like, why? And Ezio just goes, it's not for us. Like, because he's you know, because of what's happened in the prior games when he unlocks things, he knows these aren't his clues. So he just walks out, and that's it. I was like, so lame. This is so dumb.
I mean, this is the problem with the first game that I had, right, is that it totally feels like they're leading up to this point where it's like, they even talk about how, like, he's sort of, like, his abilities are getting sort of formed by what he's learning in the past. And then you get to the end of it, and they're like, we need to escape. And then you just sort of, like, stand around. And she's like, I'll come back for you next game. And, like, you just stand around and nothing happens. Like, that's why it's so terrible. It's like, you want that last level where you start, like, actually using the stuff as Desmond. Mm-hmm. And then you get a little bit of that in Assassin's Creed 2. Yeah. It's, like, still not a lot, but they kind of tease it a little bit more, so it's a little bit more satisfying. But, like, 3, I hope, like, 1... it needs to go more forward in the future. I think it's got to be like 1800s, 1900s. It's got to be something a little bit more
American
recent,
Revolution.
Like that's American Revolution or something like that.
American Revolution.
And then
that would be awesome.
And then I think it's got to almost be like 50-50, where it's like you're kind of like merging like what you're doing in the past and like you've got this whole adventure in the present.
Well, that was the thing.
Especially if you do something like like more present, where it's like you're like almost like running through a city in the past and at the same time running through it then in the future.
Like Philadelphia or something.
That'd be really awesome because the buildings and the structures are kind of changing, but
see, they tease that in Brotherhood. In Brotherhood, like you know, it picks up from where 2 left off. So you're on the run or whatever with your team, and you go to the little villa, the villa he had back in the day. You know what I mean? Where like number 2, where you're building it all up or whatever. Yeah. So you can pop out of the Animus and run around there in the modern times with cars in the streets and stuff. But there's nothing to do really.
Yeah. One of the other things they hinted at in 2 was the fact that he might actually be able to enter that state without having to use the Animus at some point. Mm-hmm. And so that's the other thought, is that like maybe they don't even use the Animus anymore.
That'd be cool. But it'd
be kind of cool. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm ready for something different. That's the whole thing.
The Da Vinci Disappearance is $10.
Yeah.
You gave it a 6.5.
Yeah.
So it's fine. It's just more of the same.
Exactly. It was one of those things where running around in that world, I saw all the missions I didn't play like during the game when I was just doing the main thing. And that's what this falls into. So if you had a lot of those, just go play those and don't worry about this.
Yeah.
Because that's what I'm going to do. I think this weekend I want to borrow it and just go do some more of those because I enjoy that world. Like, I enjoy
Can I have Crysis if you're going to borrow that?
No, I want to do both.
All right.
Come on.
Well, I'm just asking.
Have you played Crysis on PS3?
I got too drunk to play last night.
Yeah. I've been, so this is the thing, right? You know, Arthur says it's playable on PS3, but he said, I'm better off playing on 360 or PC. But here's the thing. I've managed to not turn on my 360 for like 6 months now.
Wow. So
and one, I'm almost positive that my Xbox Live Gold has been canceled by now. But two, it's kind of fun to just like see how long I can actually
go. How long you can ride this out?
Because there hasn't been like there's no exclusives. And there hasn't been a downloadable game that is only on Xbox that's made me feel like I have to turn it on. I just haven't gotten to that point.
Castlevania. I want to play that one so bad.
So I'm trying to see how much longer I can go.
Last summer.
Like, I know I'm going to turn it on for the Gears of War 3 beta.
Yeah.
But I kind of want to see if I can hold out a little longer. But I feel like maybe Crysis 2 is just going to not play at all on PS3.
It'll be interesting.
I don't know.
It sounds cool.
I don't know, it's tough. Plus, first-person shooters on PS3, not the best experience.
You don't like the sticks? You're one of those people?
I'm one of those people who's right.
It's all about what you're used to.
So,
I played Killzone 3 this week for the first time. Mm-hmm. My first time I've ever played a Killzone game. And I thought the game was fun, but just that controller is just so terrible for shooters. Everything else I think it's fine. Uncharted I have no problem with, but for a shooter it's just god awful.
I think it's fine.
Sticks are too loose, right? That's a common.
Yeah, I don't like. It's that the control and it's the triggers. You know, I'm playing a shooter.
Problem.
I'm shooting a gun. Yeah. Why can't it be a trigger? The trigger just makes sense. Yeah. Anyway. Colin, tell me about Swarm.
Swarm's really good. It's kind of like a Lemmings-esque, maybe Pikmin-esque downloadable game that came out this week. Mm-hmm. Gave it an 8.5. It's cool.
PSN and XBLA.
PSN and XBLA. It's really cool. It was a lot of fun. It, It's different in that you have to, like, you need to kill some of your little creatures in order to progress and build your multiplier and stuff, because everything's about not getting through the stages but building high scores to unlock the next stage, which I think is probably the best part of the game. Mm-hmm. So there's, like, a finite amount of levels. I think there's, like, maybe 12 and two bosses or whatever, but you'll never get to the next stage until you master the stage before it. Like, it won't let you. Like, you have to unlock, like, you have to be able to get through and build your multiplier and your scores so that you unlock the next stage. And that's, I think, a really cool way to get people to not just run through a game but really try to sit there and figure it out, you know, which is cool. I really like it. I recommend it. It's a little expensive.
$15.
Yeah, like you and I talk every once in a while about $15 downloadable games. Not really into that because a game like Trine was $15 or $20, and that's a real game. You know, it's like a big game, like a game you really lose yourself in. That's,
several hours.
Yeah, that's like you can lose yourself in a game like that. And this, you know, I want them to hit the $10 price point. But
they were at that for a long time, and now they're like more and more they're trying to push it up to $15.
Yeah, it's too much. You know, like it's. But this is one of the exceptions. I think it's a good game. I think people are really gonna enjoy it. So you know, I can let the $15 slide on that one.
Yeah, you gave it an 8.5.
Yeah.
Now, what about Madden 3DS?
Oh, Jesus!
Different story over there.
I think that game was pretty bad. It's not the real shame about it was that the game and what was really, you know, Hillary and I really discussed it and really talked about the game because he played it too, was that the game plays fine. Like the game, it feels good almost like on the new stick, the circle stick, whatever they're calling it on 3DS. Like it feels good, but there's just no modes and there's no multiplayer. So you can play a season mode and sports fans will really appreciate that. The funnest part about playing a season mode in a game like an NFL, for instance, is tracking your stats and seeing what players are doing well and what players aren't and stuff. But there's none of that in this game. So it's basically just tracking wins and losses. So you're basically just playing games in a vacuum over and over again.
Yeah, a lot of times, like, if you're playing, like, a football game, like, if you're going to play, oh, I'm going to play at the Vikings, like, you want to see if you can have Adrian Peterson, like, break the rushing record. And so, like, you need one, like, the hall of, like, the all-time record there, like, as some kind of stat screen. And you need your stats to pile up. So you're like, oh, I'm getting close.
Yeah.
Like, I want to see if I can get past, like, 2,000 yards rushing and all that stuff. And, like, to have none of that means that each game you play doesn't really matter except to just get you towards the Super Bowl.
And the Super Bowl
is just rushed.
I don't think I told you this, but I brought my beloved New York Jets all the way through a season and into the playoffs, and they got a first round bye, and then they, you know, they trounced a few teams in the playoffs, and they got to the Super Bowl. And the Super Bowl,
that's not even realistic.
No, it's not realistic at all. They ended up playing the Packers, so everything. And I think they played the Colts in the, so it wasn't quite the way it went, but. But they go to the Super Bowl, and it's just another game. You're playing in Dallas where
there's
the Super Bowl was, but there's no presentation. At the end, I win the Super Bowl. There's no celebration or anything like that. The game just ends, and then you can go, like, you know, look at your stats or end the game, and then you end the game, and then there's just something on the screen that says, you've won Super Bowl 45, and you just press a button, and it goes back to the menu. It was like playing Tecmo Bowl or, like, 10-yard fight.
More presentation in Tecmo Bowl.
Yeah, it was. It was like playing 10-yard fight or something like that. Yeah. It's just a shame because the game actually played really well. It's just, it clearly was rushed.
Yep. This is a lot like Madden. I think it was 2006, which was the first next-gen Madden football game, which didn't have, like, a franchise mode or anything to it.
Oh, I remember that one.
I think we gave it, like, a 6.5 or something like that. And it was just, like, one of those things where, like, we need to have a Madden, available to people who buy this new console. And so they just kind of throw it together. And that's what it feels like. Like, yeah. I think
Did it not have commentating? It was something weird. It was totally
for, like, 3 years, until the last two Maddens, they just had, like, this radio broadcast.
Yeah.
It was really terrible. But I felt the same way about the 3DS thing, where it's like, I think, first of all, it's really interesting playing a bunch of 3DS games that, like, dude, they might as well just get rid of the touchpad now, because so many of these games don't even bother to use the stylus anymore because they have the thumbstick. And that was the one thing with the 3DS, is that you almost needed the touchpad because you have a D-pad and you can't do much with it. Mm-hmm. But having, like, this thumbstick, like Rayman and, you know, and Madden and all these games, and Ridge Racer, they use the thumbstick, not the stylus. So the touchpad screen is almost just there. Like Rayman, they just put, like, your score at the bottom. That's it. They don't even do anything with it at all.
Yeah.
And then I don't think there was anything in Madden. And then Street Fighter, all they do is you can have, like, shortcuts to the combos and you tap the screen But it's like, I'm just curious if, like, going forward, if, like, the touchpad is just going to become completely useless.
If that happens, then how long before everybody starts complaining about not having a second stick like PSP?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're in the
PSP. Right? So now it's caught up to the PSP when it launched.
Oh, you know what? I think Metal Gear is going to be the moment where you have that. I think that might be one of those games where, unless they do it really smartly, I might be like, wait. Or when you get, like, a SOCOM or, like, a, you know, any kind of shooter, I think that's the point where you might get to where you're like, wait, this is not effective. Not that they have a SOCOM, but a game like that.
I know what you mean.
You know, I think they might hit that point where you're just kind of like, I don't understand why they're doing this. Like, It's great to have the analog stick, yeah. But at the same time, it's like, why do we have an analog stick and the touchpad at this
point? I don't understand why, as far as the D-pad is concerned in the analog stick, what I'm confused about, even though it's not quite intuitive, is like, why are they underneath each other, like, next to, like, one should probably be on the other side, probably the D-pad, just, like, because you're not going to use it as much as circle pad, and then you have that option, maybe, to have somewhat of an analog functionality if you're playing a game like Metal Gear.
I think the design of the actual physical design of the 3DS is terrible.
Really?
I think that's awful. I hate it. Wow. Like, I think the button layout's done.
Well, what do you feel though?
It's really clunky. It's kind of heavy. It's really clunky, and then it has these really dumb those buttons at the bottom, like the start and the select. Mm. It's like, I don't know. It's just, and you can't like tell which button you're pressing. It's just, I don't think it's made very well. Like I think the next version, like the 3DS Lite type version, might be cool, yeah. But I kind of think this version sucks.
Wow.
Personally,
I think the problem is software.
I think the 3D
too.
is not as good as it was at, even at E3.
I agree, man. Like because I wrote about it in my Madden review. I was like, when we played it at E3 and we played like a whole smorgasbord of games, like, and we played with the 3D and stuff. Nothing hurt my eyes. Nothing really. Some things didn't work well, but everything, you know,
and the 3D
was okay.
Worked right.
Yeah, exactly. And now with Madden 3D, like I turn it on, I'm like, this is killing my eyes. Like, what is going on?
Is it because you were anchored at one spot and you could only play it and see it from one angle?
I was tethered to a woman, or I was at, like, you know, so.
I think it's the lighting, actually. So what I'm finding in my house, so I'll play at work and the 3D is not bad, and my eyes usually don't get hurt by it. But when I play at home with the kind of lighting I think I have in my house, like, it actually causes this reflection on the screen and the 3D breaks. Like, so I have to hold it at a very specific angle for the 3D to work in my living room, which is really weird. And I didn't have any problems with seeing the 3D at E3. And also, no one's doing anything interesting with the 3D either. No.
So see,
it's just
the,
like,
fun you're missing, Dave?
It's just like a waste.
No,
it's just like
eyes.
I know, right?
Honestly, it's like a waste of the launch. Like,
yeah,
I would not buy any of these games or the 3DS now. I would totally wait.
Yeah, there's no game. I mean, that's like, what I was saying. There are no games. And everyone's like, what about Ocarina of Time? I'm like, I played Ocarina of Time on N64, and I played it on GameCube. It's
old
like,
game is old.
I mean, but that's we've talked about this on Beyond, but it's like, how many times can one specific company just rehash everything over and over again, and people just keep buying it. Stop buying these games.
We'll push that.
There are plenty of people in this office that, you know,
I can't take
it. Excited about it.
I can't take it anymore, Damon.
These Nintendo fans, you know, like they just love it.
I can't take it anymore.
But isn't it what the fans want? Because, and I'm not saying that like Metroid Other M was like this awesome, awesome game, but it was a totally different way to do Metroid.
It
didn't sell well. And you know that if they had just re-released Super Metroid, and be like, we released Super Metroid and added an extra level, that would have sold 50 billion times more than Metroid Other M. Because that's what all these Nintendo fans want.
It's the voice work that killed that game. The lovely Bones voiceover.
I don't get it, baby. I don't get it, man.
I used to be my commander, but I had so much left to say.
I mean, I think Nintendo simply just like 100% runs on nostalgia.
There's totally. No doubt. And I mean, the nostalgia factor is great. I mean, when we think about our childhoods, like it's NES and SNES. I mean, those are great times. But it's just like, how many times can you sell me a new product, contingent on it having enjoyed the old product, and you know, with a new audience that probably, you know, most of these guys have already played that game. It's like, I really think people are overestimating how well 3DS is going to do in the long term. To be perfectly frank with you, because there's,
I know that pre-orders apparently are the most ever.
Yeah, well, no, there's no doubt people are going to jump on it right now, but I'm saying, what's the burn going to be in 2 years? Like, where are the games? Like, what is really going to interest people? The only game I care about is Kid Icarus, you know, and that's not even really a Kid Icarus game. So it's like, you know, I don't know, and that's coming from someone who like was weaned on Nintendo. You know, it's like, so there must be people like me and Dave,
so
and everyone.
So NGP is the way to go.
At least they have games.
Well, do they? They have a lot of tech demos of things.
Yeah, but they said we're going to, you know.
I know. At E3, I'm sure we're going to see a whole
bunch. I mean, again, it's not rehashes in the classical Nintendo sense of being the same game, but I mean, we are getting a new Resistance, a new Infamous,
Uncharted.
A new Uncharted, a new Wipeout.
Let me ask Damon a question. So, Damon, I know you play some iPhone games.
Oh, yeah.
Do we even need NGP and DS if you have iPhone?
That's what I'm saying. It's like, first of all, you always have your iPhone with you. That's
true.
That's the big advantage it has over a dedicated portable gaming system. All it does is play games. You know, I have to. It's an extra step for me to think to take my DS with me or pack it with me. But I'm always going to have my iPhone with me. Plus, we're finding that those types of games, like Angry Birds, is what I want to play on the go. Like, even if, you know, Uncharted comes to NGP, like I don't know that I want to play a full console game on the go. You know?
Yeah, but you figure, and that's definitely the case for a lot of iPhone users, but like, I don't use my iPhone for gaming. I don't there's no games on it that really speak to me that way. Like, I want to try the new Swords and Sorcery, right?
Oh, when God.
I
get an iPad. Great. I'm going to drop you off my Twitter then so I don't have to
see. I'm not going
to
tweet about it, but I'm, you know,
Apparently, God himself developed this game.
Whatever. I want to do that. I want to play the Dead Space one, but that's really about it. And so when I am on the go, I do want to be playing. Like, I love to have an Uncharted. I'm really excited for Patapon 3. Like, I do want traditional gaming experiences on the go. But
see,
that's just the
I think Patapon 3 works. I don't think that is a traditional console experience.
But so let me ask this then.
Yeah.
At the very least, like, why isn't Sony and Nintendo, at least looking at Apple is doing, so why do I have to have a cartridge for the 3DS? Like, are you serious? That why don't you just have a marketplace where I download stuff? Cartridges are so dumb. Now I have to remember to carry all these cartridges and switch them out.
Yeah.
That's so pointless. But then why are they so big and clunky? Like, I can't believe that the NGP is bigger than the PS3.
PSP,
are you kidding me?
PSP.
And it's like, feels bigger than the PS3. But at least the very least, like, you can see that you can do great gaming on the iPhone. You don't need to have a giant screen, and I don't carry around like a purse or something. Like,
I thought the PSP Go was a great size. When they were talking about what the PSP or 2 NGP was going to look like originally, and it was a slider with two sticks, I thought that's perfect. I love how the Go is. It's as small as my iPhone. It's got solid
downloadable
state. Yeah, download. And NGP is too. Yeah. They're saying every game will have simultaneously digital. The whole 3G thing they're pushing makes me think, or hope at least, they're going to have a better app like store rather than minis. Like, change that to where they're not charging.
The minis are an absolute disaster. I don't even start on that.
Embarrassment.
The price point. I mean, some of these games are great. Like, but the ones that are like Space Shooter is probably the best
Space
one.
Shooter,
and that's $2.
Age of Zombies.
Yeah, it's like those. And those games are all fairly affordable. Or whatever. I think that I don't think they want an NGP to be this big. I think that there's just a lot of crap in it. You know, like the
crap I really don't want. I don't want the touchscreen on the back. I really don't want a touchscreen on the front.
Little Deviants is gonna be. I guarantee it's gonna be the only compelling game that probably uses that back thing before everyone's like, oh, whatever. Yeah.
One more thing I want to mention before we go to listener questions. Ghostbusters, Sanctum of Slime.
Yeah, Avoid. Avoid the Noid. Me and Colin, we played that turd for a while.
3 hours.
It told me
my console friggin' crashed.
Greg, you're the world's biggest Ghostbusters fan.
I'm a pretty big Ghostbusters fan, so it was
a couple years ago, we got a good Ghostbusters game.
We did. And Atari said, all right, cool. So now we're going to take most of those assets and we're going to put them into this downloadable game, which is kind of like Gauntlet or whatever. How they always compared it to. Four players running around. You can play with a computer. You can play online. Mm-hmm. And you'll bust ghosts. You don't trap them. You just zap them into nothing. You have three fires on your proton pack, two of which are really
so
stupid.
So boring.
And the game will be incredibly boring, and then it will get incredibly frustrating.
If you want to play a similar game that's actually interesting, play Dead Nation.
Dead Nation, much better. Same idea.
Yep.
But yeah, Ghostbusters was just it was a game that snuck up on us how bad it was.
Yeah, exactly.
You started playing like, okay, this is just kind of basic, but I'm hanging out with Colin.
We're having a good time for the first few hours. We're just talking about things and stuff, and then eventually we just start saying how bad the game is, and then eventually we just stop talking.
Then there's that silence, and then like there'd just be the giggles about the game. Like there was this one part where you have to change your weapons, and so they introduced this mechanic, and then like four rooms into the dungeon where you're doing this, because you walk into a room, the door is closed, you beat all the ghosts, door's open, you move to the next one, door's closed, and you can't get through this without switching your weapons. And so we're four rooms in, and then pops up on the screen, don't forget to switch your weapons. So Colin kept saying that over and over. I was just in hysterics at how awful this game was.
Oh, man.
Bad.
You give it a 4.5.
4.5.
Out of 5?
Out of 5.
Out of 5,
out of 5 stars.
Yeah. Well, there is one game that all the IGN editors are playing right now and having a great time with. The IGN Stock Exchange.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. I love it.
Did you hear how many points I made today so
far? Yeah, like, it's like 29,000.
26,000 points made off Pokemon Snap.
I'm getting killed.
Now, a lot of our listeners, I know, get the podcast through iTunes, and they don't read IGN regularly, so we need to explain what the IGN Stock Exchange is to them.
All right. Go to IGN.com/SX for Stock Exchange.
Yeah.
And basically what it is it's a stock market for games. You start with 10,000 points, which are like dollars, right? So 10,000 bucks. And then you get to buy shares of games you like, and they're all tracked on the like little ticker or whatever. And as they go up in popularity...
Think are going to be popular? Ideally.
Exactly. Buy game. You're just playing.
Buy low,
popular.
Sell high.
Exactly.
It doesn't have to be your favorite game. In other words.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so there's no test.
So yeah,
it's your favorite game. You can't buy it. I'm sorry.
Yesterday we wanted to see if we could game the system, and Jack DeVries put up an article about Pokemon Snap.
He compared it.
N64 game.
He tied it together. If it, whatever. Not, I didn't really read the article.
Not a current game that we would normally be talking about.
Yeah.
But he put up that article, and then a bunch of, like, you bought shares in Pokemon Snap, and today paid off.
So whenever you see just an obscure article go up about a game, you want to go buy that game, because we are insider trading the hell out of this thing.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
I think it's great. It's a really, it kind of, you know, when people were telling me about it, I'm like, all right, I'll get to it eventually. But then I started looking at it and stuff. It's just like really very deep it's an interesting idea. And yeah, it's based on metrics, on the site. So I think half the algorithm is how many people are following the game
and
then who's reading articles that are attached to that game. So there's two ways to go about it. So don't, you know, if it was me, we were buying our favorite games, I'd buy Mega Man 3 stock and then I'd make no money. So don't necessarily do that. Buy a game, you know.
And that's something to point out too. If you are looking for your favorite game of all time and it's not on there, it's because they have a cutoff for popularity. So not every game is listed currently, but if like something happened with Rogue Warrior and Jim wrote about it, right? Right now, that's unlisted. It would become listed when it crosses.
Just like the real stock exchange. Once something goes below a dollar, it's removed.
Yeah.
So.
But the trick is that if you just go like, oh, I'm going to buy all my shares in like Batman Arkham City, you're not going to make any money because Batman Arkham City is already going to be popular. So if you're buying it when it's already popular, it's only going to get so popular.
Yeah, you're going to make some money, especially leading up to reviews.
But you want to kind of buy things that you think will suddenly like jump in popularity, things that people aren't thinking about and go like, oh, this is going to become big.
Like, I mean, you know, buy Patapon stock now because nobody's thinking of PSP games. When that review hits or is about to hit, or whatever, traffic should be, you know, going up for its sell right around then. Mm-hmm. Look at like NGP stuff, you know, that has just been announced, right? Like Uncharted Project or whatever. Or somebody was buying, I know, Modern Warfare 3 stock the other day. I'm not sure what it's selling at now, but obviously that's going to go through the roof eventually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Blue chips, you got to sit on them.
Yeah.
Buy low, sell high.
That's what I'm doing with my 26,000 now. I'm going to go back to my desk, ignore work, and find games that are off.
You're like going through like paper printouts and like making notes.
That address again is ign.com/SX.
SX, yeah.
You mentioned Alan Wake earlier. Listener Steve has a download code for the full game of Alan Wake to share with his fellow listeners here. So this is a code for Alan Wake, downloadable via Xbox Live. It is KGP9R WD4XB 9FK WW 7RJ 72 TVX 83. Whoever gets that.
Got it.
Yeah, yeah. Don't forget that code. Send good vibes to your fellow listeners.
That's a great gift. That's very nice. Yeah.
And since Alan Wake is the exclusive playable character in Mortal Kombat on Xbox 360, when I get some
it'd be great. Like no matter what the first hit was, that's what killed him.
Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Remember, listeners, you can always reach us at gamescoop@ign.com, just like Julie did.
Ooh.
Greg, do you remember our friend Julie?
From PAX East.
Yes. Julie is a good friend of ours. She says, hey, it's Julie. We met at PAX East during the meet and greet and the live panel. I was the girl who modeled the underwear.
Oh, yes.
So I gave away this pretty girls, ladies underwear at the show, and she actually modeled them for us in front of the audience.
For the live studio audience.
It was pretty great.
All right.
Anyway, Julie says, Greg.
Yeah.
I know you and Steimer broke up, and me and my boyfriend just broke up after Boston.
They did not! They were such a cute couple!
So I guess it only makes sense for me and you to knock boots.
Agreed.
She says, LOL, I'm mostly joking. So
mostly, though.
I know.
All right, so
not is entirely.
Is Julie coming to PAX Prime?
I don't know.
All right.
I don't know. Sounds like you can get a handout or something.
Yeah. Comic-Con? She's going to be at the Comic-Con?
Yeah, Julie will be at Comic-Con and PAX Prime. So.
Yeah, there you go. There's also a WonderCon meet and greet, before I forget, on April 2nd. That's Saturday. Mm-hmm. A week from Saturday, we'll have one at Eddie Rickenbacker's.
Mm-hmm.
Second in Minna. Come on out and hang out. There's some IGN editors. Mm-hmm. And then you can meet me in L.A. April 16th at Meltdown Comics.
Any time for that?
8 p.m.? It's checkzombiepodcast.com.
Okay. Anyway, Julie has a question. She says, I've noticed this before, even more so since I got back from PAX. My friends and family make it seem like I'm some video game junkie. I understand that none of my friends play games, so it makes it nearly impossible to have a conversation about it. Everyone I told about PAX got these strange looks on their faces when I was telling them why I went to Boston. It was as if to them I was describing a cult or something. My question for all of you is whether you have experienced something like that, and when you talk about games to your families or friends outside of the industry.
I think, you know, it's one of those things, it gets better every day or every year, right? I mean, as far as, like, Modern Warfare has this giant thing and it's in the published consciousness, or there's a Homefront ad over here, or GTA's doing this, when people still think, like, people who aren't into games at all, and, you know, iPhones are breaking down these walls and helping out, right? But when, like, especially when somebody's like, oh, there's whores in this video game, and somebody goes, oh my god, they think of Mario.
iPhone's
they
like think the of Ronald Reagan for video game. Culture knowledge. Like, he's tearing down those walls.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, that's exactly what he's doing. So anyways, if you're completely – yeah, it's people who don't understand video games think of Mario and don't understand why you go to a convention to meet it or why you'd wait in line to play it.
But I think even if like people don't know anything about video games, when they find out what I do for a living – After they process it and realize that it's real, they think it's pretty cool.
Exactly. Once you that was the thing, right? Like, my dad, when he came out here to visit when I first got the job at IGN, like, he's never been into video games, can't work a computer, doesn't know any of that stuff, right? So he always thought it was just kind of cute or whatever that I'm doing what I want. And then I was able to show him metrics on our site, right? Like, oh, yeah, and like, a million people read this yesterday. He's like, what? You know what I mean? Like, to try to show somebody how big it is and what all it can do.
I hope the article that a million people read was something really stupid. That
it was something
that.
Like, yeah, why are there whores in Pokemon Snap?
Exactly. It's like sexiest video game lady with a beard or something like that.
This is Holly from...
I read that article.
I know. I was number one. Thank you very much.
Holly from Ontario, Canada says, hello all. I'm looking for games to play co-op with my boyfriend. We've got a sweet dual TV setup. So anyway, we did Lego Harry Potter together. This is their setup. They actually, it's a pretty nice gaming room here, and they've got two TVs set up down there.
Look what they're doing here, yeah.
Wow, that's pretty hardcore.
Yeah, they're a hardcore couple here. She says, we did Lego Harry Potter together. We are looking for something more exciting. He's into things like Dead Space, Red Dead, and Uncharted. I'm into Dragon Age and Mass Effect. We're thinking of trying Gears of War, but are looking for some other ideas. So co-op games.
Dead Nation,
yeah. We were just talking about that. Dead Nation's awesome.
Yep.
Wait, do they have a 360 or PS3?
They have both.
I see they have an NES here. And an
if you have
SNES.
A room like that, you've got everything. You don't have to worry.
Yeah, I know.
You can toss out
a Dreamcast, a GameCube. They have a lot of options.
I always tell people...
Dreamcast? well, then you two need to be playing Choo Choo Rocket together.
That Choo Choo Rocket's a good one. Could you play that one online? I don't remember.
I don't think so.
NBA 2K on Dreamcast? That was the best online game, man. There you go.
Can you still play Dreamcast games online?
I doubt it.
You cannot. I don't believe so.
I always tell people looking for co-op games, Lara Croft and the Guardian of Light.
Ah, yeah.
Really fun co-op game that came out.
You know what's another? I know you like this one. I think it's local only, but Soldner X 2 on PSN is a good one,
too. That was a fun one, yeah. But I think you're right. It's only local. This is Patrick Gorey. Says, only started listening to GameScoop about a month ago, but I love it. You guys are great. I'm only 14. My first gaming system was the PlayStation 1. I'm aware there are many classics on the NES, Super Nintendo, that I may have missed because of my age. I want to start playing some of these classics, but there are so many. It's kind of overwhelming. What games would you recommend?
Super Mario World.
Yeah, like, if you're gonna start playing NES games, start with the Nintendo first party titles.
Yeah,
start with the Mario, start with Zelda 1 and 2.
You can almost go chronologically. Yeah, so you start with Super Mario and then work your way to, Metro and Kid Icarus and those kinds of games, and you can get into the third party stuff. Yeah. Mega Man, Castlevania, all those kinds of games, DuckTales.
Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Personally, I'd probably skip NES and just go right to Super NES.
That's blasphemy.
I think that's where it begins. Oh, I think so. What's better, Metroid or Super Metroid?
Super Mario World.
Yeah, but they're different. I like to know. I mean, maybe it's just me, but I like to know. When you look at Super Metroid, it's like it's cool to see Metroid and where it's been and then how they got to that point.
Kids today. They don't have that nostalgia factor that you have.
To me, the number one game that I would recommend is Super Metroid, which honestly, you could just play like Metroid, what is it, Zero?
Zero Mission on
DS
or GBA.
GBA, whatever it was. Because that has the same kind of sense. But to me, it's like there's a lot of modern games that took so much from Super Metroid's design.
Oh, yeah.
Like including Batman Arkham Asylum and Shadow Complex.
Yeah, that whole exploration.
And to me, if you play that game, I think you have a really good understanding of games. And then if you play like something like Super Mario World, I think you get a good grasp of it too.
I think Hill has an interesting point. If you're like a young gamer now who wants to start getting into older games, it might be better to work backwards.
Yeah.
Rather than just like start with an NES.
That makes it kind of hard too, you figure, because then the graphics are getting worse instead of
better. But at least it's not like, it's a gradual worse, not just like all at once, just like, what?
That's not what's important,
But you're losing gameplay mechanics. Obviously things are refined, you can't,
for sure.
Stuff you do in Super Mario World, you can't necessarily do in Super Mario Brothers.
I agree, and I think I love the idea of, I had an older brother, so that's why, I was born in 1984, so I obviously was born after the Atari 2600 era, for instance, but I still, had all these things around, and I was able to go back. I think it's cool to personally start with something like River Raid, and then jump over to something like Metroid, and then jump into something like ActRaiser, and kind of just go forward, and just kind of see, like Hillary said, you can draw a direct line from Arkham Asylum to Castlevania Symphony of the Night to, Super Metroid. There's
to Ghostbusters,
naturally. Yes.
My recommendation would be list out your three favorite games that you've played, and then find the things that influence those games, and then play those games. Like, don't just like jump back and be like, I'm gonna play. First of all, there were like
there were
a thousand NES games. So like, I mean, to just jump in is gonna be pretty hard. But take the games you like now, and then like work your way backwards to the things that influence you. Like, that's a great example of Arkham Asylum, that you could go to Castlevania Symphony of the Night, which is an amazing game, then go to Super Metroid, and like you have like a real sense of the progression of those kind of things. That'd be kind of cool. That's kind of a cool idea. I'm gonna do that.
Yeah, because those games are directly related to all of each other.
The same thing with RPGs. Like, if you wanted to play like something like, if you love Mass Effect 2, for example, I mean, like, you can kind of start like pulling your way back through like RPGs and games that have morality and sort of like how that
KOTOR
came to be, and KOTOR. Stuff like that. Like KOTOR and like Ultima 4 if you have a PC.
Yeah. That stuff's fun. That's my favorite stuff. I can talk about that stuff all day.
You could also just search for IGN Top 100 NES games. We do have that list.
Yeah, we do.
Handy list.
That was a labor of love.
Yeah. Cameron Fraser says, I've just been playing through Killzone 3, and it made me think the music in this game is incredible. I personally find that, being a musician myself, music in a game can either make or break the experience for me. Killzone 3 and Uncharted 2 are two frontrunners for best soundtrack in my books. Unusually, James Bond Bloodstone has a great soundtrack as well. My question to you is, which games do you find have the best soundtrack? I find it's something that has been left out of reviews recently. Are there any games that would regularly have been mediocre but made better by its music? I've recently been playing a lot of Fallout New Vegas, and I love the music in that game.
Yeah, that is good.
How much I like, enjoy that.
I think, you know, it's funny because I think we were talking about old games. It's like, I think soundtracks in general have become less important over time because there's more of a chance to get other kinds of audio in there with voices and sound effects and stuff like that. So like, every classic NES game, it feels like, has a great soundtrack. We're working on our list now or whatever, I just feel like, you know,
there's a difference between a score and a soundtrack. A score is like sort of like non-licensed music that's kind of playing in scenes, whereas like a licensed soundtrack is like the music that you pick. Like, I think the GTA games do a really great job of like, they all have like 100 licensed tracks in there, but those tracks and the DJs they have on the radio like actually set, like they do a great job of setting like the time period and like the mood of those games. Like, if you listen to the Vice City soundtrack versus GTA 4,
so it is
like,
the best.
It's like Vice City soundtrack is like way better, like made that game like way better than it was.
Yeah, right?
It's so like good. And so sometimes you can have like those effects, and like one of my favorite games of all time is Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 get the Dreamcast version. If you want to go back in time and play awesome games, that game's amazing. But it had, you know, that had like 12 or whatever songs, and like for me, it's like those songs like stick out as much as the gameplay. Or Crazy Taxi. Like that is as much a part of the game as the game itself. But then there's like things like Mass Effect that kind of have like a good score. And I thought Red Dead, when it has like the, you know, when you've kind of, you think you finished the game and you're making the ride back home, and it's got like the song that's playing, like I thought that worked so well.
That's an awesome moment.
Yeah, Rockstar does great stuff for their soundtracks. From what we've heard of L.A. Noir too, I really like the music in that as well. One more email here from Ryan Peck. All he says is thank you for the podcast, but he provided us with this fine piece of artwork here, Greg. I think you will appreciate it.
Oh, it's us oh my gosh. There's a lot going on in this photo.
Can you describe the scene here?
It's like a New Year's party. It's a black and white photo. There are five people in the photos. Three of them are from, you know, the real old photo or whatever. They're classically trained in tuxedos and whatnot. One has assed ass coming out of his mouth. And then Damon and I's faces have been superimposed on two of the tuxedo men's. And the caption here is, best friends forever.
I know. I like that. Who are these old people we're friends with?
First of all, I don't think they're superimposed. I think at some point in time,
This is like The Shining.
Yeah, you guys actually have been in this photo from way back when, and at some point you're going to get in a time machine and go back in time.
That cigar in your mouth looks pretty awesome.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
That's a cigar, right?
Yeah, I don't know if that's. I don't know where that picture's from.
That is like the ending of The Shining.
By the way, that is the longest cigar I've ever seen.
Oh, I think that's a real picture. I think I got that cigar for Christmas because I got a 4-hour cigar for Christmas.
Oh.
Or a 6-hour cigar or something. Okay, okay. So
and you finally smoked it when you went back in time.
It's coming. The jump. The leap home.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that, Ryan. We appreciate it. All right. That's all the scoops we have for you this week. Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Hill. Thank you, Colin. My name is Damon. This is IGN GameScoop. And we're out. Come get some. IGN GameScoop.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.